33 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Details, UBC and DC at yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
Yo, peace, this is Rod Stars.
Peace, this is G1, and together we're Rebel Diaz. When we in the DMV, you know we listening to that People Power Radio, WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice. Let's go.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Collision. This is your home for jazz and justice, WPFW, and this is the show where sports and politics collide. I'm Dave Zirin, joined as always by 11-year NBA veteran, author extraordinaire, and public speaker in demand, Etan Thomas. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing?
I'm feeling hype. I'm feeling ready. I'm feeling to take to the streets.
Right.
And that's always a good feeling as opposed to saying I'm going to lock my door and hope it all goes away. So, you know, feeling good, feeling out there, feeling forward looking. And one of the reasons I feel that way is because of our other co-host whose work is truly giving me life these days on a street level here in occupied DC. I'm talking about Chuck Modiano. Modi, how you doing, sir? Man, Modi's on mute. Which is frankly something I've never seen before. Is Modi ever on mute? Oh, there
no,
he is.
No, I'm off mute now. Doing great, DZ. It's on.
Great to hear it. Yo, we've got so much to discuss this week. I mean, just go down the list. Everybody knows, or if you don't know, you will know by this evening, but it's the start of the NFL season today. We may have a thing or two to say about that. Also, this is, as I'm sure you've seen in the press, the 20th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina, something I've always called the unnatural disaster that really, really damaged and frankly, fundamentally warped and changed forever the great city of New Orleans. And also, I mean, my God, the demographic change in New Orleans over the last 20 years makes DC look like nothing. It's really staggering. And we're going to talk about all of that, all about that unnatural disaster in New Orleans and frankly, where we were 20 years ago, because it's actually very fascinating how the three of us were reacting to that moment. But first and foremost, look, we're a DMV-based show. And the thing that people are talking about in DC is the militarization of our city and the response of Mayor Muriel Bowser, which has been described by some as being treacherous, being a betrayal, cutting off the other Democrats who are fighting this at the knees, that there's much to discuss with that. Or maybe the critiques of her are overly harsh at this moment because she is so boxed in as the mayor of what they see as a federal city. But before we go there on Bowser, I want to actually even start with Chuck to set the context, because Chuck was at a demonstration on Monday, not a demonstration, I'm sorry, a press conference on Monday that spoke about this issue and has also been to several actions during this week. And Chuck, give us both the tenor, that's the most important thing, and just let us know if Bowser is part of the discussion. And then I'm going to go to Atan for a deeper dive on Bowser. So tell us about the week, sir.
Wait. Let me say this, because I do want to do this. I gave our guy Mike a clip to play of the mayor had a press conference as well, and I really want to get Chuck in particular's reaction to everything that she said in this short little press conference. So let's go to that real quick, and Chuck, you just go and respond however you want to respond after you hear it. Sound good?
Well, I really want, I got to get Chuck talking about the grassroots stuff, but definitely then take it to Bowser.
Should I talk now?
Let's do it.
And I have to say that there seems, I think the last time was with you, I had a similar, trying to make sure that we have the record straight on what we communicated in the mayor's order. And I have to say that there was a Washington Post headline that circulated that was simply false. I went back, I reread that order, and then the hundreds of words that were in that order, there was no mention of welcome or welcoming. So that headline was false. And sadly, I think it was intentionally misleading. Let me tell you without equivocation that the mayor's order does not extend the Trump emergency. In fact, it does the exact opposite. What it does is lays out a framework for how we will exit the emergency. The emergency ends on September 10th. The only way it can be extended legally is by the Congress. So I want the message to be clear to the Congress. We have a framework to request or use federal resources in our city. We don't need a presidential emergency.
Very interesting. And I don't think the full story from what she's representing herself right now, but let me take it to you, Chuck. What's happening on the ground? And then, yes, as Atan said, by all means, take it into your thoughts on what Bowser is saying about the state of affairs.
So, well, first of all, thanks for showing that. And I want to talk about the press conference. But let me just say, when I speak about Bowser, I'm not even speaking about my thoughts. I'm trying to give an extension of the people I cover. And it's always been that way. And I'm going to try to do my best. I was at the press conference, on Monday, and the press conference, like every press conference, yes, it starts with Trump, and it was held by Harriet's Wildest Dreams. It was outside, the DC courthouse, where 106 young people were up for, we're going to have a hearing. And it was followed by a cop watch going on hours. I want to be very clear about that. The cop watch, not just a press conference, a cop watch, because and Harriet's Wildest Dreams in particular, Free DC, they've done some really good work in this area, because when we know when you pack the courts and judges are watched, it does impact sentencing. That's just true. Yeah. And so I extending them, they were encouraging anybody who could tap in and help in any way possible, whether it's court watch, whether it's filming the police or others, then please do so and tap in with them. So obviously it's all been said about Trump. Trump is fascist. Trump is Gestapo. That's not news though. The way the press conference went was about the collaboration of Mayor Bowser, which she just, juxtaposed herself in that clarification, and that the, it does give the potential to go past the 30 days. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know all the specifics of home rule, but I can say, you know, I would say go to there's a Free DC press conference today, and I even think you'll see that there was yesterday there was DC Against Trump Alliance had a rally, and in their rally, they were saying Bowser's a traitor. In their rally, they had chants like Trump and Bowser sitting in a tree, attacking and assaulting young people in D.C., something along those lines. It wasn't favorable to. I will normally leave it for others to dissect, maybe lawyers or ACLU, what an executive order means or does not mean. I'm not qualified to do that. But what I am qualified to do, as almost in some level uniquely in media, is give a longer view of Bowser. Because I have been covering protesters since in her whole tenure and since 2012 when Trayvon got shot. But really, what people need to know is if we're unclear, then you have to look at someone's past record. Like if you're uncertain, does someone deserve a benefit of the doubt or not? And I am guilty. I have to be honest with both of you and listeners. I'm guilty of downplaying in my media coverage Bowser. There were so many times, particularly in the George Floyd uprising, that negative things were said about Bowser. Because I haven't been an activist who liked her. I'm going to let you know. And there are many reasons. And I would cut it off. Because I didn't want to make it about Bowser. I wanted to make it about police or this or that. And my coverage has downplayed it. And in 2020, I'm just going to give you one, two, or three moments. In 2020, there was a moment where protesters were kettled, illegally kettled, one on August 14th and then one on August 31st. And on August 31st, they just randomly kettled people. I was there both times. And the next day, after the random kettle, Bowser wrote a memo to Michael Sherwin, who's Trump's guy, who's in charge of prosecuting, and says, I need you to prosecute harder. And nobody could believe this outside of D.C. because there's this fantasy, and the fantasy is that Mayor Bowser wrote these letters, Black Lives Matter, on the plaza, and stood up to the big, bad bigot Trump, who is a big, bad bigot. But the truth is, when Trump's goons left, what happened is MPD was no better. In fact, many times worse because they were more hidden in their brutality the rest of the way. And I have this covered. I'm going to come out with a documentary at some time with all of this. And it's all documented. But September 1st, literally 5 years to this day, she was chastising Trump's people for not prosecuting these protesters who were illegally kettled. And it'd be the one day story. But I interviewed a whole bunch of people in the street who were outraged. I'm going to go back and put that together because now it's useful. No one wanted to hear it. Two more things. Fast forward, and this is two of a long list. Fast forward to the D.C. criminal code. I'm covering the D.C. criminal code. In other words, there was a unanimous decision based on years of research to change the D.C. criminal code that would not be so harsh on young black kids. It was a unanimous decision. Mayor Bowser vetoed that criminal code and vetoed it. And then they went back to the council 12-1 and overrode that code. And that is in January. So she went against the entire D.C. council, which is, you know, predominantly Democratic council. What happened is all that work that went into 3 years of work based on evidence-based research was thrown out because the Democrats, people don't want to hear this, Joe Biden and half of the Democrats joined the Republicans to sign off on a Republican bill overriding the D.C. council using their powers. This is Joe Biden. Because they don't want to be seen as soft on crime. And Bowser doesn't want to be seen as soft on crime. And when politics and the welfare and well-being of young black youth in D.C. collide over and over again, Bowser has chosen the side of politics. What is good politics? Mm-hmm. What will get me reelected? One last thing. I know I'm filibustering, but this is very important because there's a tie-in here. Fast forward last year. I am covering the GW encampment. And I noticed, like, you know, the 20 yards away, Lauren Boebert and some crazy Republicans are just talking nonsense. I thought I might film it. I said, forget them. I was wrong. And they're saying Mayor Bowser has to do something about this encampment. She must do something about this encampment. We're going to have a hearing on anti-Semitism next Wednesday, and she's going to have to answer to us because this is anti-Semitic. Of course, it wasn't anti-Semitic. Jews were a big part of that encampment. And then this happens. So next Wednesday, there's a hearing. What happens Tuesday night? Bowser MPD brutally raids, takes down that encampment is violent with protesters, makes 33 illegal arrests, in my opinion, of those individuals, ties them up in court for like 6-8 months to where they can't even protest anymore. And they cancel the hearing on Wednesday. She didn't have to go through the hearing because she got ahead of that hearing to take down the encampment. These are three major pieces amongst many others that I'm not mentioning that show when it comes time to fight the right, she fights for them, not against them. People could do with that what they want.
Yeah, very true. I think this moment, though, is and the game she's playing right now, actually, I would argue, Chuck, is actually a level up from everything you just described in a much more dire moment than everything you just described. And I'll explain why I think that. But go, Gatan, did you want to give your thoughts on this, on the presser, on the mayor saying the Washington Post is not telling the truth, though I see a lot of evidence otherwise?
Yeah, no, I want to listen to you all. I'm listening to both. I listened to the press conference. I don't know if y'all got a chance to listen to the press conference. And, you know, for a little while, she was talking about this new initiative that she wants to do to add more police to D.C., the questions, when the media, it opened up for the questions, you know, I thought that was a really interesting exchange. I was kind of surprised that we haven't heard more from Bowser, to be
honest. There it is.
There's Great been, point. You know, you have, you know, Governor Westmore was saying a lot. He's coming out fighting. You know what I mean? He was like, no, this isn't okay. What Trump is doing is not okay. What this is, you know, he's coming out fighting. Mayor from Chicago coming out fighting. And I, you know, Mayor Bowser has been kind of quiet. So this press conference was the first time that, I mean, at least that I have heard that she has addressed anything or said anything. So I just wanted to gather the information. So please, Dave, go ahead and tell me what you thought of everything.
Yeah, I mean, here's the issue, and you just hit on it big time, Etan. Does anybody doubt what Wes Moore thinks about federal military intervention in the state of Maryland? Does anybody doubt what Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott or Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker or the mayor?
Brandon Johnson.
And I got it. And Brandon Johnson's statement, wow, we'll take the paint off your walls if people take the time to read his resolution about federal troops in Chicago. And as if we haven't learned by now that Trump always sees negotiation as an opportunity for leverage and as the other person showing weakness. This is not the old politics of let's find common ground and figure out how to screw people together. You know, that's what you, the three of us, have been raised with. We're dealing with, or help people, you know, we're going to go there, whatever. The point is that this is about Trump trying to impose federal military will on our cities in violation of the Constitution, in violation of every possible law. I mean, this is dire. This is, I've my entire life, I've resisted using the word fascism because I think it's overused. And too many people who are on our side sometimes are like, oh, Bob Dole, 1996, running for president. That's a fascist right there. And it's like, okay, there's a big difference between a right-wing politician and somebody trying to extend federal military control over our cities. And this is next level. And the fact that we don't know truly what Bowser thinks about all this. She went after the Post, and the Post is an easy target, in part because they're owned by Jeff Bezos. They're looked at as a Trump rag. And even though they actually have done some really good coverage locally, it's like it's an easy about what's happening with the militarization. It's easy to hold them up and bash them over the head for a DC audience. But let me read to you guys how Time Magazine has just covered Muriel Bowser's press conference. Let me just read this to you. The mayor of Washington, D.C. has ordered the city to continue working with federal law enforcement officers even after President Donald Trump's takeover of the nation's capital is set to expire next week. Mayor Muriel Bowser, a Democrat, issued the order Tuesday, saying that even after the public safety emergency Trump declared over crime in D.C. last month expires, city officials will ensure, and this is how she put it, coordination with federal law enforcement to the maximum extent allowable by law within the district. That is her quote. And then it says, listen, this is the part that scares me the most, fellas. The order went into effect immediately, and it has no end date. Now, maybe Mayor Bowser disagrees with every word of that, including her own quote. Maybe she does. But here's where we get back to people like Wes Moore and Brandon Scott and Brandon Johnson and all that. The fact that we are even debating what she actually thinks about this is an astounding, astounding betrayal to the people of DC who are living through this, living through the checkpoints, living through the immiseration of the service economy, because, you know, no one wants to go to date night and be confronted with checkpoints and, you know, the National Guard from Mississippi holding live ammo. Right. And so, you know what I'm saying? And yeah. That means waiters, waitresses not getting tips. That means people not being brought on for their shifts. You know, I got a friend who teaches at a largely Latino school in DC. They usually get 20 new students a year who are from immigrant families and need to learn English as a second language. Mm-hmm. This year they got one.
Wow.
One. Classrooms, half empty. Half empty. Canceling, you're going to love this. Canceling Latino Heritage Day, which is a festival they do every year, because they're worried at parents and kids it's going to be an ICE raid.
100%.
That's the reality of DC, and I don't see the mayor saying anything about that. And the fact that there's even some sort of equivocation and we don't quite know and you know, is what she's saying here or there, to me it's just an extraordinary betrayal, not just of the people, but of also home rule and the thing she says she cares about, which is statehood. If you stand up to Trump, he will back off. If you don't stand up to Trump, he will cut you in 1,000 pieces. And that's the only thing that really makes me wonder if Muriel Bowser, and I'll end with this, Etan, I'm sorry to filibuster as well. If Muriel Bowser, who is a very ambitious person, who is an acolyte of Michael Bloomberg, former mayor of New York, multi-billionaire and a centrist, and mayor of DC, I'm sorry, but look at the history, is not a job that goes anywhere in politics. In part, for rampant racism, but actually, I think it's bigger than that. There's nowhere people go from here, and she wants to go somewhere. And that part of this also makes me very nervous. And if she's the VP of the Trump organization in 10 years, just somebody, you know, remember I said so. Atan, sir, thoughts?
Let me ask you this, both of you. I want to pose this to both of you. Is there a different way that she can show resistance, being that it's DC? And as everyone knows, DC is a unique place. It doesn't have a, you know, it's a state, but it's not a state. You know, it's a little bit different than, say, you know, with Maryland, Virginia, Chicago. It's different. Does that change the way, and I'm just asking honestly because I don't know, does that change the way that she can resist publicly against Trump, because everything that is happening right now is in DC and it's not necessarily in Maryland and, you know what I mean, Chicago. Does that change anything, or am I reading too much into it?
No. That's an excellent question. Chuck, you go first.
Well, that's where I started. I ask this question all the time, and it's not a question I feel comfortable answering because, like I said, I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand the intricacies of home rule. I don't, right? And maybe we need to get somebody on who understands all those intricacies. So, because the argument is, anytime you critique Bowser, no matter what the critique is, there's going to be a lot of people who will say, she can't do anything. Her hands are tied. It's this or the worst. That's what's in the comment section. That's what people are saying. And we did once have a mayor, Marion Barry, who did fight everything tooth and nail and whatnot. At the same time, I want to say something. It's not that she's not resisting. It's that she gets ahead. Like, there's a difference here. She prevents, she not becomes Trump before Trump, becomes a Republican before a Republican. She gets ahead of everything. She gets ahead of every threat. So her argument was, when she was threatened to take BLM off the plaza, okay, I'm going to take BLM off the plaza because there's bigger fish to fry. And, you know, that made sense. And then the next day it was, hey, we're going to take care of those unhoused, those encampments Trump threatened. You need to do it. And there's a 30-day rule. So did she wait the 30-day rule, fight the 30-day rule? No. She, the next day, 2 days later, they went in on unhoused. Every threat comes with capitulation. So all I could do is communicate what your opening question was, Dave, which was, what was the tenor of that press conference? They said the tenor of the press conference is, listen, if you won't fight, we will. 80% of Washingtonians are against Trump's federal takeover. 80%. That pragmatism is in our favor. If you won't fight, we will. We will get rid of you next election. That was the tenor. You could join us, or we could be in opposition. So I can't answer. I'm not qualified to answer the home rule legal questions, but it's probably good if we could get someone in. But I want to be clear that she's not just kind of complying or backing in. She gets ahead of these things.
Yeah, I would like to get some, though, because I'm not an expert on it as well. But I know that D.C. is in a unique situation. And I know, so what I've heard was that the way that past mayors or whatever can kind of resist has to be done differently. But I don't know enough to be able to explain it, why or how they're supposed to be able to, or what back channels they have to work or anything like that. But I would like for us to be able to get someone to just kind of break that down for everyone, because she's been very, very quiet and this throughout this whole process. And that was my first question, because for this to be happening in your city, I would think that she would be the loudest.
Now, I've changed my opinion.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I've changed my opinion a little bit over time of covering it more in depth. And for those who don't know, she supported Michael Bloomberg's campaign. Michael Bloomberg supported her. That's where she sort of has come from. And she has had the same stop and frisk policies as Michael Bloomberg, but it just didn't get the attention in D.C. that it got in New York City. And when I look at her entire record, I've actually just altered my opinion. I don't know if I'm accurate. You know, I don't know. But I've moved to more, and this is hard for people to grasp it. Maybe this is who she is. Maybe, you know, her policies, which are often quite right wing, are very pro-police when she's pressured or not. Maybe that is who she is.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure, but I've changed that opinion. And then the last thing that comes out of the streets was that everyone was saying is, well, if this was all true, if it was just about D.C.'s home rule, why is he going to Baltimore next? Why is he going to Chicago next? Why is he going to these other places next? This doesn't have to do with anything about D.C. and home rule. This has to do with Trump, a tyrant, Trump, a Gestapo tyrant, trying to take control and going in maybe the most vulnerable city because of the home rule to enact a larger agenda. But he's going to those other places next, and I don't think we set a pretty good example.
I'm trying really hard not to cuss right now.
Yeah.
Like really, really, really trying hard. And I think let's go to break so I can take a deep breath and tell you some of the stuff I know about home rule, about the options, because this is something I've had to look into over the years. I moved to D.C. right when the control board was put in the late 90s, and we got arrested fighting that, and we had to look into a lot of this stuff. So let's go to a quick break right now. I mean, we're close enough to the bottom of the hour. Y'all good with that?
Yeah, sure.
All right, let's go to a quick break, and we'll be back right after this here on The Collision, where sports and politics collide.
It's like a magnet. Right on the other way. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. You can do anything.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on.
They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people.
Dear Trump,
There ain't no other way that I can say this. The whole world knows that you're a liar and a racist. The fire in the pavement, satire imitation of just someone from the past filled with dire freaking hatred. From all your views on things where you lie on immigration, you wanna build a wall and just divide us as a nation. Riots in the states, all these trials, tribulations. You're a front runner, honestly surprised you even made it. That's no compliment, that just proves our country got no common sense. Voting for this man who take this nation and demolish it. A man who never knew the closest thing about the politics. Donald J. Trump, the man who really needs to call it quits. All the things that come out your mouth, it's all crazy. Like Mexicans are rapists and murdering people daily. All the Mexicans that when it came up to the states were just families looking for better life, better safety. But of course, you don't know about the struggle of trying to get a dollar. You had the richest father, small loan of $1 million. I need to get this point branded through you. You never worked in your life, it's just like everything was handed to you. You act a fool and you're just playing it through. It's full-blown destruction's what you're aiming to do. And some pretty bad groups are loving and praying for you. See if the KKK supports you, what's that say about you? You got it twisted, Donald.
Wow, that was fantastic. This is The Collision, where sports and politics collide. I'm Dave Zirin, along with Etan Thomas, Chuck Modiano. What did we just hear? That's one of the best I've heard.
That was The Real Red Wolf. That's actually an old one, but it's an oldie but goodie. Real talented cat. The Real Red Wolf.
We need those oldies but goodies, because it's a heck of a reminder that, you know, Trump didn't just turn fascist with this second term. Right. You know, and this has been a long-standing aspiration for him to be the strong man, and he's using the DC and Muriel Bowser to do it. Okay, here's the issue.
All right.
Unlike everywhere else in the country, because this is quote-unquote a federal city, the president is allowed to call unilaterally a 30-day state of emergency that allows the National Guard and whoever the heck he wants to patrol the streets. The first thing Muriel Bowser should have done, and what she did, was welcome it. The first thing she should have done is say, crime is down, which is true. The only reason crime really was up was because it was up everywhere during and in the aftermath of the pandemic, when there was so much dislocation among people in this city, in this world, the likes. And it has gone down as people have become more acclimated to just living. That takes a long time for people. You know, it's not like people snap their fingers and say, oh, great, now I'm back to work. So, you know, think about medical bills, think about desperation. So all that. And I would say this as well. Because of that, she could have immediately sued and said the basis for the state of emergency is completely false and is a pretext for military occupation. I would argue she would have lost that suit. But issuing it would have been a very important line in the sand about this city and where she thinks this city is going. Instead, her response was, let's do it, Donald. Let's do it. And Donald Trump, in every press conference now, praising Muriel Bowser, praising her relationship with the campaign, holding her up in contrast with the other people that we've made, because she didn't put that line in the sand. So that's the first thing about it in terms of home rule and what's allowed and what's not allowed. And I agree, very, very different. Second thing is she should be on the front lines every day, as you're saying, Etan. She needs to be doing press conferences by restaurants that have had to close because of the state of emergency, raising attention. You know, it's an embarrassment that the New York Times had to do a big story about black residents in DC scared to send their kids to school because of what's happening. It's embarrassing that New York had to do that story, when frankly, it's a story that she should be highlighting every day for the local news, let alone the 80% that you said. And then the last thing truly is that her putting a line in the sand is also about poking at the lie for why they're doing this. Because have y'all noticed that it started with crime and then it went now to sanctuary cities, and now they're mulching and picking up trash to beautify the city? Yeah. This is a sham from the beginning, because the only goal is the federal militarization of the cities. And her, as the first city, needed to put down a marker to say this is not going to start here. We refuse to be the weakest link in Trump's effort to kill democracy and take over this country. That's what she needed to do. Instead, we have differing opinions from her office about whether or not she's welcoming this or not. I mean, I read you the start of Time magazine. That's what people are reading. That's what people are understanding. And I'll end with this. We talked about, I talked about how it undercuts people like Wes Moore and Brandon Scott. I regret saying that first and foremost, because the people it really undercuts are the people in the streets trying to build a movement. And I know the mayor is polarizing. I know she's a centrist and all the rest of it. But if she had stood up strong on this, that's very helpful to draw people into the movement who support her. And so her not doing that actually divides and lessens the number of people who can speak to why this does not work. So I cannot view this as anything but treacherous, not because she's at the White House hugging Donald Trump, because that's not happening, but treacherous because it really does seem like she's trying to have it both ways in a moment where, frankly, there just aren't both ways.
Okay. I mean, I can't fight that. You know what I mean? I think people need to hear more, and maybe we can try to, you know, do this as you know, continuously covering this, since we, you know, we are, you know, based here in DC in the DMV. But I, you know, Chuck is right there on the front lines on the protests, and really want to, you know, hear from the people who are, you know, directly being affected and out there fighting, you know, not necessarily just fighting Mayor Bowser, but what is happening, and that she is not necessarily drawing the line in the sand. And that's been the sentiment. You know, every activist that I have spoken to, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, every activist that I have spoken to echoes the sentiments of what we saw in the Washington Post article, that that she welcomes what is going on with Trump, that she is in support of what's going on with Trump and everything, and wants to, you know, aid Trump in every way that she possibly can, is, you know, not necessarily cheering it on, but she's not providing any resistance. That's the sentiment of the people that I have heard. Mm-hmm. And she needs to make it clear if that's not her sentiment. And it needs to be repeated over and over again, not just one press conference where it's mixed in with a lot of other stuff. And you're talking about adding the police, and you're talking about the budget, and you're talking about all of that. When Wes Moore goes on Roland Martin, or when he goes on different programs, he's right to the point. This is what I feel. Trump said this. This is what I feel. That's what I want to see from Mayor Bowser personally. Now, whether she can do that or can't do that, or has to play it a different way because of the DC thing, I have no, you know, I'm not an expert on that. But that's what the people want to see. And right now they're not seeing it.
And before you go, Chuck, I'm so sorry. It's like we have to go back to the Time magazine article where she signed an extension of this with no end date, as she put it, to ensure coordination with federal law enforcement. At mere minimum, after 30 days, there has to be a rule of Congress to continue it, at minimum. She should
She said in the press conference, she did say in the press conference in that clip that we played, that it's going to be over, and she gave the date that was going to be over and then put it in the hands of the Congress. But I don't know, is that what you're referring to?
That's exactly the confusionism, though, I'm talking about.
Okay.
Like the Time magazine thing, I'll quote it again. It's ensure coordination with federal law enforcement to the maximum extent allowable by law within the district. That's her signing something that says that. So I am more likely to believe something that has a signature on it than her criticizing the syntax of a Washington Post article.
All right, and let's be clear here that the 30 days end September 10th. So if, let's say, Bowser is correct, then Bowser says, well, we're doing this to, I think her words are, create a pathway to end this takeover in 30 days and it not extend. That's her argument.
Mm-hmm.
But even in that best case scenario, if she were to be right, part of the deal of that pathway is to have far greater coordination with the federal government. So if she is saying, if it's okay, we could end this in September 10th, but Trump has far more control of the MPD, which was already horrible and horrific before Trump, has far more control of the MPD. If that's the deal being cut, that's not a win either. You see what I mean? So like, even in the best case scenario, a deal is cut and it's problematic.
That seems to be where we're at. That certainly does. And Atan, I think the final thing really is what you said. It's like the people of this city have the right to know without equivocation where she stands.
Right.
It's the right to know that.
I agree.
Especially at such a perilous moment.
And there was a report that she had sent her statement to Trump's people. They reviewed it before it came back. So the fear is, even if on paper it ends September 10th, that federal takeover is kind of indefinite because the feds have so much control embedded.
Chuck, a question for you. At the press conferences, did anybody use the R word? And the R word in this case is recall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, most definitely. There's talk of recall. I think they'll actually see that happen potentially. I heard recall. I heard a lot of, we're going to vote you out in November 2026. The word, you're a fascist too, was thrown around. I know a lot of people don't want to hear this. I am just simply communicating to you what is being said at these press conferences, at these rallies. This is what is being said. Now, this doesn't get all in the Washington Post. And the Washington Post has actually been a friend to Bowser over the years, to be quite honest with you, because it is a Washington Post town. But what is happening on the ground, you know, doesn't really get amplified the Washington Post, really not at any time, not in 2020, not since. So it's very important to be on social media, to listen to WPFW, to find out what is actually happening on the street.
Does she have any, like, you know how some people have spokespeople, like, that go out and speak on behalf of Mayor Bowser? I'm just still stuck on the fact that it's been so quiet from her camp. Like, you know, besides the press conference, we heard it from the press conference, but I can't get past that because literally, you know, Governor Moore, he's been on probably about 10 different programs talking about everything. And you know where he stands. Like, I don't know. I don't, you know, want to beat a dead horse, but I you know, think that they're not doing a good job of really getting their message out if their message is that they're not on board with everything that Trump is doing. And I'm sure that they hear the voice of the people who are upset right now. And it's all over social media. It's all look like you have to be under a rock to not be able to know how the people are feeling right now about you. I just don't know how you can be quiet about that.
Unless this is who she is.
Unless
Amen. I got you.
Amen. Okay, so we're going to try to figure this out in the weeks ahead because, honestly, it doesn't look like it's going anywhere. At September 10th, this is not ending, and we know that in part because our mayor signed a piece of paper saying that that would be the case. So let's take this for a second here to what's going to happen September 9th, that not September 10th. Okay. September 9th, Atan Thomas and I, and then Chuck Modiano coming in like the Goose Gossage, coming in like the reliever at the end.
They know they may not know who Goose is. Maybe they know Mariano. That could be outdated, but you need to update your references.
Oh, man. I don't even know. Josh Hader. I think that's who's out there. So let's, my man, Bautista, Felix Bautista.
Let's go. I'll take it.
Mountain, that's the coolest player in baseball. All right, so Atan and I, for folks who don't know, were the first ever speakers at the first ever Bus Boys and Poets. We were the opening event at something that they didn't have the liquor license. They were worried the police would even shut them down because they weren't Andy Shalal, the terrific owner of the Bus Boys. Like, he didn't even know that we were, that we were allowed to have an event, that it was breaking some sort of code or something.
Right.
Now, So Atan and I on September 9th are going to commemorate that event by, you know, each saying a little something, something. And then Chuck's going to come out and we're going to really talk all together about sports in the last 20 years, the legacy of Hurricane Katrina, what it's meant to this country and the whole like of it. And also, frankly, reflecting on what it means to have been the first people to speak on what has truly become an institution. And last thing I'll say, and I'll throw it to you, Atan, just for some thoughts on this, is that when we did that event, it was the first night of Hurricane Katrina. And I remember you and me actually talking backstage about it. And I remember the conversation, man. And it kind of like stings me a little bit. Because if y'all remember the first night, it looked like the levees were going to hold. Yeah. And it was going to be just another hurricane in New Orleans, except there were fears. And you and I had a conversation like, is this going to be as bad as people fear? Or is this going to be like one of those hurricanes where it's much ado about nothing? And we talked about like, how much should we even talk about it? Because we don't want to fear monger if it's a... So I think all we did was we said prayers up for the people of New Orleans, but we had no idea what was about to happen.
No, we didn't. And, you know, as it went on, it got worse and worse. And you saw the people who needed help. And, you know, Bush just, he just didn't help them. There's no other way to say it. I mean, he did a, what was it? What do you call it? A flyover? Was that what it was? A flyover? And, you know, that what I remember is hearing the then mayor, and I can't picture his name, his bald head. I picture his face.
Oh, yeah. Hagen, right?
Hagen, there we go. Just going ballistic, saying, look, he didn't want to hear any more lip service. The people are hurting. The people, you know, like, we need help. Send help now. And help just didn't come for a very long time. And it was something that nobody really expected, but in seeing it in real time, it's such a reflection of this country and this country's history and this country's present, you know, where there are certain groups of people who are elevated and, you know, taken care of and preserved and appreciated and valued, and another group that's not. And it's that, you know, it's the haves and the have-nots. And it was no more clearly displayed during Katrina. That's what I really remember from that.
Wow. I remember that too. Now, Chuck, as you're going to talk about it, Bus Boys, maybe you could even give us a little sneak preview right now. You had a very, very specific perspective on what was happening after Katrina hit. Can you speak about that a little bit?
Yeah, that's right. And I also echo what Atan just said about it also did the same for policing, because for those who don't know about the Danziger Bridge shooting, the New Orleans police just murdered black people looking for help. Google it. You know, that said, I was in Houston at the time Katrina hit. I worked with young people in foster care and organizations. And, you know, I was at an extended stay, and I would stay at extended stays just in case I'd stay longer. And I like to have a hotel that's a reasonable. And when that hit, and I heard that their evacuees were going to come to Houston, I immediately called and they said, hey, put me in for the month. Keep me for the month. And it was crazy, like $40 a night, right? And at the time, by the time of the night came, all the hotels were booked. So I went straight to the Astrodome, and I'm in a suit and tie, by the way, and that's relevant because I go there and I walk up to the desk and I say, how can I help? How can you help? You could get behind this table right now and start signing people up and registering people. Okay, let's do it. And because I had a suit and tie, everybody thought I was in charge, and I'm white, people thought I was in charge, asking me all these questions, and it was pure chaos at the time in the Astrodome. You get in where you fit in, you put down cots, you do everything, you welcome people. And I'll jump past a lot of things just to say what the most and biggest takeaway was. Is ultimately, I spend most of my time on laptops, because no matter how hard someone had it, no matter how many possessions that somebody lost and they lost their home, everyone was concerned with, where is my loved one? Is my loved one safe? As you could imagine. And there was no centralized system. There were 6-7 databases. So we would go on 6-7 databases periodically with these lines to see if we could find where someone's loved one was, if they were able to register at a database. And I have to say, like 80-90% of the time, it's like, I'm very sorry. You know, we haven't. Please come back soon. Let's try again. Every once in a while, you hit it. You find someone in a loved one's a database, and someone's jumping on you, as you could imagine, and hugging you. And that was a lot of the experience for me personally back then, was this, the fight to find your loved ones and your family were safe. Excruciating, though.
And speaking of excruciating, as brilliant as Spike Lee's documentary is, When the Levees Broke, there is a short series right now by Ryan Coogler on Hulu called Come Hell or High Water, looking back at Katrina. And I love Spike Lee's doc, and it makes Spike Lee's doc look like Disneyland. It is deeply, deeply upsetting. And I say that as like, because I don't want people to watch it and just be traumatized by it. But for people who really want to face what happened 20 years ago, go to Hulu, get the free trial if you have to. Ryan Coogler's doc, Come Hell or High Water, man. I'm still halfway through. I needed a break. That's how intense it is. Yeah. And the legacy of that, Atan, we're going to have to really break that down, because you said it's an echo of the past, and I agree with that so much. But you also said we see that the present day. Mm-hmm. And I would argue even that Katrina actually represents a turning point about the escalation of what we've seen before, the willingness to let people die, the willingness to ignore what was really our first climate catastrophe in this country, like true climate catastrophe that captured the imagination, that was purely, we've basically cut down the wetlands that used to stop the hurricanes. And that's why this happened. Mm-hmm. Not just some hard hurricane, not just some global weirding, but we as human beings decided to destroy the wetlands, and now people's lives are destroyed. And the response by the government is to shoot them on Danziger Bridge and let them die on top of their roofs.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And I think breaking that down is going to be very important. Like today's heartlessness that we see, mm-hmm. you know, was that first unleashed onto the scene with Hurricane Katrina? Just something to think about.
Yeah.
And heartlessness that we have. Wow. Well, we're running towards the end of time. Magic Mike's going to knock me out if we just don't at least do a roundtable to see if what we think our local Washington Commanders are going to do this year. I know we've all got a lot going on, but I want to respect our audience that needs the escapes too. I love the way Washington's looking. Second in the NFC East is a definite playoffs. Jaden Daniels, top 5 quarterback by the end of the year. I'm totally bullish, even though I've got real questions about weapons and defense. Atan, any Commanders thoughts?
Hey, listen, I met Jaden Daniels at the Mystics games when they played Seattle when Slim came back. And chopped it up with him a little bit, you know, wished him good luck this season. And I got to say, I'm very impressed with him. Not just from just meeting him and he was great, but just watching him as a player. One of the things that I see that he does is he doesn't try to play hero ball. He's able to do everything that RG3 can do as far as evading and the speed and quickness and playing outside the pocket. But he knows when to slide. He knows when to run out of bounds. He doesn't have to be the hero to try to get the few extra yards and make the big play. But he knows how to pick his spots. Like I've been thoroughly impressed with him. And for him to be as young as he is, to have the poise that he has, I'm looking for big things for the Commanders. You know, you can tell me what you think, but I'm looking for big things.
I am too. He's the sort of person, people meet him, and it's just like the impression he gives off is fantastic. And then on the field, off the field, leadership, it really does all connect. And in him, it connects in a very exciting and special way. We got a good one, Washington. Chuck, any thoughts you want to share?
Yeah, the poise. I echo what you have said. The poise is what stands out about Jaden Daniels. He seems like a 10-year veteran in there, unshaken. And that's what's really important. And I slipped something. I want to mention one more thing. It's the one-year anniversary where Justin Robinson was murdered a year ago. And I want to uplift his name. He was also a violence interrupter. And the police got off. And not only that, the Pure the Streets violence interrupter program is one of the cuts that is happening that people are fighting for to be restored. And that speaks to our earlier discussion. But I have to say, Justin Robinson, we had big protests for him.
Yeah, be safe out there, everybody. The MPD seems to be taking this opportunity to prove themselves to the feds. And that's a very dangerous situation. Tom Thomas, last words, sir. Anything you want to say?
No, great discussion as always. And let's keep pushing the envelope with this Mayor Bowser situation, everything that's going on in D.C. I'm sure people are very appreciative of it. So let's keep pushing. Let's just keep pushing this envelope.
I'm going to take it another step, Atan. I'm going to contact the office in the next 10 minutes and invite somebody from her administration to come on the show.
And I have a thought as well.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
All right, yo, everybody, thanks for listening. Please stay frosty. Chuck Modiano's new name is Street Beat. Coach McNutt keeps texting me that during the show. For everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. We are out of here. Peace.
Killions to waste on the war and make it question what the taxes is for or the cost to reinforce the broke levy.
I'm Jackie Lukeman, chairperson of the Black Alliance for Peace Coordinating Committee, with an editorial. Donald Trump imposed federal control of the Metropolitan Police Department and deployed the National Guard in Washington, D.C. under the pretext of public safety. This follows his March 2025 executive order establishing the Safe and Beautiful Task Force aimed at addressing crime in D.C. and after the Secure D.C. Omnibus Bill was passed. The latest in Democrat crime laws that have devastated marginalized communities, particularly Black, African, working class, and youth. Now Trump goes further and invokes law and order to justify military occupation. Militarized domestic occupation that advances as the U.S. and the West deepen their support for the Zionist genocide in Gaza, while they normalize repression of the global masses struggling against and resisting them. We must confront the colonial capitalist structures and oppressive class rule that made all of this possible. We must fight Trump's authoritarianism, but we must also fight Democrat tough-on-crime criminalization of poverty and dissent. And we must fight for a future where safety is not imposed by militarization, but built through structures of popular democracy, peace, social justice, and collective liberation. The Black Alliance for Peace says, end the colonial occupation of Washington, D.C. No justice, no peace, no compromise, no retreat. The full statement can be found at blackallianceforpeace.com/BAP statements. This has been Jackie Lukeman, chairperson of the Black Alliance for Peace Coordinating Committee, with an editorial.
The United Black Community presents the 21st Annual Love Supreme, a musical, poetic birthday tribute to another Ruth, John Coltrane, featuring the Nasa Abadie Quintet, Cindy Brown, Kenny Carroll, Nana Malaya, and more, on Friday, September 19, 2025, at 7 p.m. at eLife Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Details, ubcanddc@yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
WPFW presents Genius plus Soul equals Ray and John. Tuesday, September 23rd, 5 a.m. until midnight. This will be a fundraising birthday tribute like no other, illuminating the lives and contributions of Ray Charles and John Coltrane, two icons of American music. Schedule and details at WPFWFM.org, where you can also contribute anytime. WPFW, preserving the culture one broadcast at a time.
No social justice issue.